nice to hear that a gong early in the morning. Really listen to it until you hear the soundless sound. Good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for September 30th, 2012. Koyo Kubose here. My father, Reverend Jome Kubose, wrote an article on Everyday Suchness about that was titled The Soundless Sound. And interesting article on that. Well, let's go right into our guest today to give us a Dharma glimpse, Linda Winooski of Wisconsin. She's part of our LM5 group, and it's a really good group. They're doing well. So, Linda-san.
Thank you for inviting me to do a Dharma glimpse. This Dharma glimpse is on a daily lesson on impermanence. Reverend Koyo gave me the idea for this Dharma glimpse when every week or many times in the lay ministry program, he greets me with, "How is the weather in Wisconsin?" In one of his teachings, he taught that uncertainty is a virtue. Well then, I guess Wisconsin and the entire Midwest is the perfect place to learn that lesson on a daily basis. The capping phrase for living in Wisconsin or the Midwest is, you'll never know what the weather is. It can change in the blink of an eye. The code phrase would be dress in layers. Here's an example. Last March, this winter, it was really an amazing fluke for us, mild with only one major snowstorm. We were all seduced into thinking it was a dream. We didn't know what to make of it. And although we were joyful, there was a little bit of angst involved, wondering if we would get hit with winter and spring. Trying to enjoy the now moments of unseasonably mild weather while not quite trusting what we were experiencing is a challenge. The egoic mind doesn't feel comfortable with uncertainty, always focusing on the future. Oh, will we get another snowstorm? Will we get a full blast of cold air? When will it happen? When will we get hit with it? Always focused on future imaginings and uncertainty. So there it was on March 2nd, 2012, a clear, bright 40-degree day, which is very warm for the Midwest in March. I was off to a day-long retreat, 1 hour from my home, driving my little Hyundai instead of the big four-wheel Ford truck we used to navigate through the snow. All went well until 2 o'clock p.m., when out of the blue, giant snowflakes were falling fast and furious. Fear came up as I thought about having to drive home in my little Hyundai. But I remembered the mantra, present moment, only moment, smile. It was also interesting that at the same time, I was walking the labyrinth, which is a meditative practice that is all about being in the present moment. So by the time I got into the car, I was at peace in the present moment. And what a joyful ride it was. Even though the car nearly slipped over into a ditch, there was no fear. On all sides of me, a winter wonderland magically appeared. It was magnificent and awesome, driving through the forest with the snow glistening off the pines. And in the blink of an eye, it was over. The next day, in 50-degree weather, the snow disappeared, an immediate lesson in impermanence. Dressing in layers reminds me that as we remove one layer after another, we remove the artificial clothing that hides our natural state, our inner beauty, our true self. This is what it's like living in the Midwest. Every moment there is a change in the weather. I could drive 20 miles and go from clear to a snowstorm and from warm to cold and back to warm. Yes, in the Midwest, we live with continual uncertainty. But I am learning uncertainty is a virtue, as Reverend Koyo said. It teaches me that impermanence doesn't have to create anxiety. It can open us to the awe of just being alive in every moment, living fully in the present moment, living in truth, living naturally, being at one with all there is, moment to moment. Smile. It's all good.
Yeah, that's very nice. Smile. It's all good. That's nice. Well, friend of mine, Reverend Ron Nakasone, told me he's working on a new book that has to do with uncertainty and ambiguity as Buddhist virtues. And, he, you know, this is the theme of the book, and I think that's a very intriguing theme, and it's very true. I guess, it's, you know, in our lay ministry program, when they write their reports on different readings, we try to encourage their working with the material on a personal level, applying it to their, how it might impact this one's spiritual growth and journey, and come up with a code word. That code meaning just that it has idiosyncratic, individualistic meaning for the person himself. And it's not that it's secret, but it's so individualized that with that word, somebody else might not know exactly the context or the different layers of the meaning. So Linda said her code word for that Dharma glimpse was dressing layers. And it comes, of course, from changeable temperatures during a day. And if you dress in layers, you could, you know, take off as it gets warmer and put on if it gets colder again. The flexibility there. And so, of course, this means psychological layers too. It means when the situation changes, you have to have the mental flexibility to adapt. You know? 'Cause if you're rigid in the sense of you only got, you wore a heavy coat or you didn't even wear a sweater, then when the weather changes, you say, oh, wow, and you got a lot to complain about. And if you're stubborn mentally and say, hey, this is the way I expect things to go today or in my life, and then when they don't and things change, you say, hey, okay? You've been dressed in layers. I think uncertainty and ambiguity, well, as a virtue, means that we should see it as a good thing. Okay? Usually we don't. We want things to be certain and so forth, but hey, life is such. It doesn't have to be a particular religion that gives a teaching about it. Uncertainty and ambiguity is built in as reality. Okay? That's not a teaching. It's reality. Taking off from a kind of a saying, very cultural saying, it might go like, humans make plans, but Dharma laughs. Huh? Of course, usually it says God laughs. Yeah, we make plans and then it's not going to happen. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't make plans, but we have to be flexible when things change. Okay? We have to be able to laugh, too. Sometimes we have to have a philosophical sense of humor. Yeah, we did all this, and yeah, sure enough, all our plans toppled because of a big snowstorm, and the buses didn't come, and then I missed this and that and this and that. Huh? I was reading an article that appeared on the internet, and a person was talking about laughter as a key ingredient in, you know, how to handle everyday life. And the title was Harvesting Happiness, Laughter is my gateway drug. I'm paraphrasing it from this article. You know, the picture of a young child laughing its head off. And the article says, hey, they're not kidding when they say laughter is contagious. Just think back to the last time you really laughed. No, a quiet chuckle under your breath doesn't qualify. I'm talking about the deep, real, in-the-gut laughter that makes you forget all the lousy things that might be going on in your life. It's the kind of laughter that, for the instant, makes everything seem simple and carefree. When was the last time you experienced a natural high like that? Laughter is the ultimate escape from the high-drama, success-driven world in which we live. And once you experience the overwhelming effects of true spontaneous laughter, you will begin to seek it out daily. You should. It only takes once or twice to get really hooked. You could crave laughter. You could become addicted to it. Pretty soon you'll rearrange your day to be around people who enable you to experience it. Laughter will become the drug that gets you through the day, and that's a good thing. Genuine, unscripted laughter is a healthy kind of release that we as humans crave to help us balance out the negative aspects of our lives. Laughter is the lens that lets us see the humor and happiness even in our disappointments. Allowing ourselves to laugh at our situations, at ourselves, this de-stresses things and brings us right to the moment of what's going on instead of worrying about the past and future. Boom, here it is. And it gives us a tool so that we can see the world as a, even though changing, unexpected things, it still could be joyous and downright humorous, and laughter becomes a gateway drug to happiness. Okay. And then she says, article ends, so go ahead, let yourself laugh. Do it often as possible. Laughing regularly is good for your physical health and psychological health. It's a de-stressor, and it keeps you in a state in which you don't have to worry about this and that and get weighed down. Laughing is therapeutic, energizing, absolutely critical to being a balanced person. It's the most effective happiness drug out there. I remember that little sayings, I said one was like, laughter is like having taken a mini vacation. I thought that was kind of neat. My father, Reverend Jome Kubosa, in Everyday Suchness book, had an article on laughter. And as I recall, you know, he talked about a man who really laughed. And whenever people went and had interactions with this man, oh, they just came away feeling so good. And he said, you don't need to go see a therapist if you're down. You just go visit this man and you experience his laughter. And wow. And, of course, a lot of things about health research and so forth, the role of humor in definite physiological effects. You know, I think that somebody once said that the most important chemical law in the universe is that you cannot get ulcers and laugh at the same time. I remember there was a good Dharma friend. She was a lady, and she always listened to Click and Clack. This was in the Midwest there. And there was a radio show Saturday morning. And Click and Clack referred to two brothers, Tom and Ray, who have a Auto Repair. It's a syndicated column in the newspaper, and they have a radio show, too. So people call in or write in and about problems they're having with the car or situations, and can you give us advice on what to do? And they give good advice, very sound mechanical advice. But they're always laughing, and they say, you know, funny things like, oh, well, your wife will appreciate or this or that. Or, and they just laugh, too, you know. And so my friend said, she doesn't even have a car. She doesn't drive. She has no interest in mechanical things, but she always tunes in to Click and Clack because she just loves their laughter, and it really starts her day off right. Wow, well. I remember there's sort of a little joke. I wrote about it in the last Oneness newsletter, but you know the old term about the different schools, major schools in Buddhism. The Theravada way of elders was called Hinayana. You know, Yana is vehicle, and Hina was, you know, the smaller vehicle, more elite vehicle of the monks and so forth. And then the Mahayana, the great vehicle, meaning that it's open to all people. Everybody could get on this vehicle. Okay, it's not only for people that use a monasterial life in the monastery. So Hinayana, Mahayana, the two major big schools in Buddhism, sort of like parallel to maybe Catholicism and Protestantism in the Christian tradition, where the Catholicism is a much more orthodox, uniform, more, you know, priests don't get married and so forth. And Protestantism is very diverse, a lot of different denominations. Okay. But anyway, I said that I'm not really Hinayana. And then I said, I'm not really Mahayana either. I prefer the Hahayana school. And we take ourselves too serious. Hey, are you Hinayana, Mahayana? What school are you? And, you know, the merits of what vehicle is better and so forth. And, of course, I saw in Tri-School a cartoon, I mean a joke, it said, doesn't matter what vehicle, all vehicles are going to get towed. You know, you think you could get a good parking space sitting with this vehicle, that vehicle, it doesn't matter what vehicle you're traveling in. All vehicles will get towed. Not laughter. Hey. Ken Tanaka, good Dharma friend, Eminent, famous Buddhist scholar. He's writing a book. He loves Buddhist humor. And he said he's working on a new book. And, in fact, I just got an email from him that says he's submitting this joke to these different publications. And he was just alerting us because I was involved. Professor Al Bloom was involved. We were at a conference gathering 2012 at the Honolulu Buddhist Study Center this past August, and I should have that. I just thought of it, but I don't have that email here in front of me. But he said something like, "This is an actual exchange that took place among three panelists," and he starts off by saying, "Reverend Koyo Kubose was talking about how to thank shoes," and you know. This is, of course, take off from my father, Reverend Gyomei Kobosi, was famous for giving Dharma school talks to the children every Sunday. A lot of times he talked about, you should thank your shoes. You know, when you do, put your hands together in gassho, it means thank you. You want to, and you don't think about thanking your shoes, but you shouldn't take it for granted. he would tell the children, you know, your shoes protected you all day. They didn't complain and everything. Don't just kick them off when you go in the house or getting ready for bed. Put them nicely together. You know, even pat them and say, thank you, my little shoes. And this became very famous because he said it so much. And people, children, when they grew up, they always remembered that. And even when as adults, that they returned to the maybe as a lay speaker at Sunday service and or Brotherhood Sunday or something, and they come and part of their introductory remarks would they say, "As when I grew up in Dharma school, I was taught to thank my shoes, and I still do." And so many people mentioned that as adults. I remember that I wrote about this in my book, Bright Dawn, about shoes, and many, many stories about it. Some were humorous, too. Some were a man who was dying of cancer, and I visited him, and he says, "I sure am glad that I met your father some 40 years ago. I'm really grateful for that. And I'm also thankful for my shoes," and he says. And there was another fellow who said he was in basic training when he got drafted, and he was polishing his combat boots in the barracks. And then the guy in the upper bunk said, "Hey, this guy's talking to his shoes." So I was saying, "Hey, we should learn how to thank our shoes." And then Ken Tanaka's article said, so Reverend Dr. Bloom said, yeah, that. Thanking your shoes, that gets to the soul of Zodo Shinshu teachings. And Dr. Tanaka said, "Yeah, that's a shoe-in as for the best joke of the day." And so we were all having these quips. And I also wrote that in the latest Oneness newsletter, giving a short report on my trip to Hawaii. And I put in a lot, I shared a lot of the humor that we shared on the diocese as panel members. And one time, Dr. Tanaka and I were just trading quips. And Reverend Bloom, Dr. Bloom, said, "Hey, am I the straight man here or what?" And we started joking around. Ah, that's so nice to share. Huh? Share laughter together, share food together. And I even did a Buddhist stand-up routine many years ago. And because I always like to go to improv and, you know, sit on TV and so forth. And so like Dr. Tanaka, we really like humor. There's been books written on it, you know, Zen and the Comics. Spirit of humor, where they look at the instances of humor in the Buddhist literature, where the teachers used humor to enlighten people. I think humor is a way, you might think it of something as lighthearted, but, you know, like I say, lighthearted doesn't always mean superficial. Some of the functions of humor, not only as a tool for physical health, but for spiritual health too. Humor is a way, is a tool to accept the unacceptable. You know? And even in daily life, there's so many things. You know, if you try to correct discrimination, misunderstandings, and you're going to spend your whole life if you get obsessed with straightening out these different interactions, because it's going to be endless. Now, sometimes you may choose to do so. You may feel, hey, you know, I got to do that. But other times you say, hey, you just got to laugh it off. And one of my favorite jokes about handling, in this case, ignorance or, you know, cultural stereotypes and so forth. This is a joke about a Japanese-American you know, my children are the fourth generation. There's a lot of fifth generation Japanese Americans. I'm third generation. Okay. My parents were born here. I was born here in America. So we've been around. We've been assimilated. We're not recent immigrants. And some of the first generation that came over, a lot of them were gardeners, landscape gardeners, you know. That was their business. They had clients and they had trucks and they would take care of the people's lawns. Many of them were, you know, Japanese were good at this. And so there was one man, he was a Japanese American, and he was living in the Midwest, and he was a physician. So he lived in a pretty good neighborhood, and he was in his front yard working, you know. And a blonde lady in a Cadillac came driving by, and she said, "Say, how much do you charge for doing yard work?" She said to him. And he said, "No, I don't get any, you know, I don't get paid, but I get fringe benefits." And she said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "Oh, I get to sleep with the lady of the house." I mean, this kind of humor is a great way to handle certain kinds of situations, you know. So that's all for today's broadcast. You have a very beautiful, laugh-filled day. Thank you.